Welcome to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. It's me, Chelsea Skidmore, coming to you from my office right now, which is in my new apartment, which I actually think is a townhouse. And I moved from West Hollywood to Los Feliz. I love it. And we moved into a nice apartment. It's bigger, it's better, but it's funny because my husband and I don't know what to call it. We don't know. We're pretty sure it's a townhouse. Our neighbor confirmed it's a townhouse, but feels bougie to suddenly say townhouse when I was living in a one-bedroom apartment right before, you know? It's a transition of size, and I think I'm going to go with home. So I'm living in my home. I'm in the second bedroom right now, which we're using as an office, but it actually just has boxes all over the floor because we've lived here for a month and I've been too lazy to unpack all of them. My dog's barking. He has to go outside and go to the bathroom. So I'll keep this short and sweet. So yeah, I haven't recorded over the past couple weeks, for a number of different reasons. You know, I moved, I was feeling sick and I was working so this episode, I was so excited to have Laura Bites on, who is a hilarious comedian and a great person, and she's so fucking funny. And so I have to apologize and just say that the audio is a little fucked up. Someone filled in for one of the producers where I record, and they fucked up. They fucked up the sound, and it was very frustrating. And my producer did what he could to fix it. So it's not 100% great, but I would still suggest listening through, because once you get over the sound being a little off and not as normal, you'll enjoy the episode. So my apologies, and hopefully it won't happen again. Love you guys, and enjoy this week's episode with Laura Bites.
Well, yeah. I just meant I'm a dumbass.
Hi. Laura, gorgeous Laura.
Hi, gorgeous Chelsea. Thank you for having me.
You're a Barbie doll.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's a full... Is it rude to say a full transformation?
No, not at all. That's okay. A really nice thing to say. Thank you so much.
Can you hear me like this, by the way? I'm like in the side of the mic.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, thank you. Because I've never sat at this angle, but I like to look at my guests. Yeah. Okay, and I like to admire.
This doesn't extend more. Oh, it does.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. Well, that's how it needs to be.
Yeah, that's better.
There's
a couple of adjustments.
Are you happy? Okay, cool.
Full transformation.
Thank you so much.
I've had a transformation myself.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you transform from into?
10th grade. An anorexic into a beautiful woman.
A babe fashion?
Yeah. Well, I went to, I was anorexic in 9th grade, and I was really skinny, and I felt like guys didn't like me, and I was like a big pothead and very hippie-ish, and like, you know, some of my choices were bad. I had a rainbow poncho, I had toe socks, you know, shit like that. And I went to boarding school in Switzerland briefly when I was 16, and when I came back I had gained like 10-15 pounds. I dyed my hair blonde and I just had a European edge, and everyone was like, I told you Chelsea was hot, and I was like, wait, what?
Oh my gosh, we could stop the podcast right now and I would leave being like, I learned so much about Chelsea today. I just learned 10 new things about you that I never knew. Tell me more.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, this is, you're the guest, but I start that out because for me, like, it annoyed me that, like, everyone's like, oh, I told you Chelsea was hot. And I was like, what? Like, it was just strange, and I feel like it kind of, like, never left me in a way. And you've always been a gorgeous babe, but, you know, you dyed your hair blonde, you lost a significant amount of weight, you're dressing very sexy, and we love it.
Thank you.
Beautiful makeup, self-tanner. So I'm sure you're getting a lot of, like, wow, compliments. Like, how does that, like, are you like, yes, or are you like, oh, I've always been a...
No, it feels really good, but it's like, it's such an inside job, and I really relate to what you just said, because I still look in the mirror and see, like, the things I would change, and so many people are saying such nice things to me, and it, I don't know. There's a part of me that's just like, oh, lots of people are saying things to be nice to me lately, you know? And it's like, no, they probably like think that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people are, but I'm like afraid to believe it because I wouldn't want to be overly confident, even though like there are so many worse things to be than overly confident, like underconfident.
Yeah. And I feel like I would describe you as a very confident person already.
Thank you.
You are.
Cool.
Your confidence is very attractive. First of all, let me just start by saying you are one of my favorite comedians to watch. You're so fucking funny. I loved to see the photo of either you went before or after Sebastian recently.
Yes.
I saw the photo on your page and I was like, oh, that makes sense. Like, that's a great pairing.
Because
to me,
you.
You're like so female Sebastian.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've definitely never gotten that one before. Yeah, I brought him on and practiced his intro in the bathroom stall, like, over and over before I introduced him, and then, like, biffed the handshake. I, like, went for a fist bump, because that's what we've all been doing. And he went in for the handshake, which to me at this point feels like sex. Like, it's just, it feels so much. It feels like so much. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. A full handshake. I'm like, I don't understand why we ever did that in the first place, but that's a separate...
I can't remember the last time I had a full handshake.
Yeah, people
not
are going for it
sensation.
Now. I'm like, have we learned nothing? It's just an exchange of germs. I'll never understand. But anyway, yeah, he went for one and I fucked up. I would shake Sebastian's hand for crying out loud. I mean, it was a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I cackle at you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Was your stuff... Okay, so... I know that you did Steven's podcast, and I learned a couple of things. One of them, he said that you had said that you, I want to talk about the voice changing, if we can,
yeah.
Or just the story behind it, because I love that. And then another thing is that he said that you started in Chicago, and is it true that...
I started in Milwaukee.
Oh!
Yeah. I did three years in Milwaukee, then three in Chicago, and then I've been here for, I think, five.
Is it true that you didn't move to LA until you have been doing stand-up for 10 years?
No.
Okay, I don't know. I'll just let you tell your history.
I didn't move to LA until I've been doing stand-up for 6 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
But, so I'm curious about what your early stand-up was like when you started in Milwaukee. Like, was it similar to what you do now, or was this, like, a character that you grew into?
Yeah, this was definitely a character I grew into. In the beginning, it just was like writing any jokes I could think of. So it was like really all over the place. I had some jokes that were just like really clean, amazingly stupid, embarrassing, like puns, you know? And then I had some stuff that was, I tried everything, you know? And then it's like, people laugh at stuff and they don't laugh at other stuff. And so you do the stuff they laugh at and you don't do the stuff they don't laugh at. And you just refine that over years and years and years. I mean, it's just years of trial and error. And so now I talk about like dating and relationships in a silly voice. Cause that's like what people laugh at. Like I even came out of COVID with like some political stuff and it just like, it's not what people want from me.
Yeah, so do you listen to all your sets and listen to what people are responding to or take note of that, and that's the stuff that you, like, do you do, like, two for you, one for me sort of thing, or is it mostly, like, audience-driven with their response?
It's definitely audience-driven. I do not listen to every single set, but as a rule, generally, I will listen to my set on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not perfect about it, but it's just so easy to hear what works and what doesn't if you listen back to your set. And you can't really, you definitely can't remember as well as you can listen back, because like when I'm listening to my set, I'm putting zero effort into performing it because I already did that. So I can focus 100% on just like what works and what doesn't. And then, yeah, I would go back into my writing and, like, put a box around something that doesn't work and just, like, exit out and then write the whole joke again, subtracting that part, and then try that on stage. And, yeah.
So if something didn't work, would you just try to get in a different show, or would you change it after that one time?
It would. I mean, I usually have, like, the rule of, like, three. You know, mm-hmm. I'll try it three times to see if... Because the first time you say something... The task is just to get the words out of your mouth in order, you know? So if it doesn't work the first time, it's like, all right, well, there's no way I said that confidently. It was my first time ever saying it.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Let's try it again. But if they don't laugh at it twice, I might give it another shot, but I'll probably change something before I'll try it that third time, just because, like, do you want to do a joke that works one in three times? Mm-hmm. I certainly don't. Mm-hmm. I want my jokes to work every time so that I don't bomb, you know?
Do you play with the emotion, or is it the wording, or both?
Both. Someone said, like, really early on, audiences are stupid and they need to be told when to laugh. And so, like, what word you emphasize, what you do when you're, like, hitting a punchline, it all matters so much, and it can make the difference between a joke hitting and not hitting at all.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking about when I watch Argus, and he'll be, like, 5 feet away from the microphone for, like, his whole setup, and then he'll just come in for the punchline, like that. Worst impression. But,
so funny.
But yeah. Totally. Because if they can't hear what you're saying, they can't laugh. Or just emphasizing, like, a specific word or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, so, when you started in Milwaukee, and this was, like, the basic kind of questions to begin with, like, what made you want to start stand-up?
I mean, I just always loved it. Mm-hmm. It was my favorite thing. I mean, and I was obsessed with it. When I was a kid, I mean, there just was nothing that I ever thought would be cooler to be than a comedian, but I didn't think that I could be a comedian any more than I thought I could be, you know, a unicorn or an Italian person, you know, like it just, I thought it was just for someone else, because I grew up in like in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where it's like you go to school and then you get a job and like have kids and go to work, you know, and then I had a friend who was doing open mics, and I went to one, and I was like, shit, I could do that.
How old were you when you went to your first one?
Oh, it was in 2010, so not that long ago.
I remember my first mic, my leg was shaking so much, like crazy, like, yeah, I was so nervous.
Yeah, I was fucking terrified.
I used to take, actually, I totally forgot, but I would take, you know how Rogan has that On It, like, pill company? There was one that was, like, an anti-stress one, and I took it every single day for, like, 2 years straight, like, before every single, and then I was like, I don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
But, like, I was so freaked out, until I wasn't, you know?
Yeah.
And just kind of had to go through that. So, by the end of your 3 years in Milwaukee, was moving to Chicago for stand-up?
Yeah, I just kind of ran out of space in Milwaukee, and I didn't have, like, a job I liked. You know, I didn't have anything.
That's interesting. I ran out of space.
Yeah, I ran out of space. I was, like, working at a corner store for $6 an hour under the table. I was making 50 cents more than my rent every month, plus, like, the $35 I got for doing, like, the open mic at the bar there. And
that's a lot of money for a mic.
Yeah, and I somehow saved up $500 with, like, show money. It was, like, cash in my mirror that I had.
In your mirror?
I had a standing mirror, and I had, like, a lot of cash.
And you put money in the mirror?
Uh-huh.
I love that image.
Yeah, and I saved $500, and then I moved to Chicago with $500.
Did you know anyone there?
Not well. I knew a couple people.
You went with $500 in your mirror, like in your pocket.
Yeah, and the willingness to lie about my waitressing experience.
Yeah.
And I got a job as a waitress. I still can't open a bottle of wine. I mean, I'm probably the worst waitress that anyone's ever seen.
Where did you work?
I was a fucking I worked at a Pan Latin restaurant in the Loop of Chicago. And I was, like, a cocktail waitress, and it's, like, a really good menu. It was, like, an expensive place with, like, $10 drinks, which is a lot
out
there, you know? And I'm, like, not knowing what the fuck I'm doing at all. Waitressing is, like, a lot harder than people think it would be. And I had waitressed. I mean, I'd worked in restaurants in Milwaukee, but it wasn't like that. It wasn't, like, expensive dining.
Carrying a tray is terrifying.
Yeah.
I don't know how the waitresses here do it, especially in a dark room. I could never.
I don't know how I
would drop it. It's too heavy. I don't have the arm strength.
You just spread your hand out as wide as you can and space the drinks out evenly, and then you pray. And I don't know how. I never dropped a tray.
Wow.
And it was hard because they would, like, on the weekends, it would turn into, like, a nightclub. And mm-hmm. so I'm having to go through, like, shoulder to shoulder people dancing with, like, a tray of mojitos. And I'm like, God, I just want to do stand-up. It's fucking Friday night, and I'm here.
How long did you work there?
7 months. And then I got fired in a text message 2 weeks into my sobriety.
Oh. Why'd you get fired? I've been fired so many times.
He didn't even say. He just was like, yeah, weird. We like don't have any shifts for you anymore.
That's strange.
Yeah. I was like, what about Mondays? And he, and he just never said anything to me. Because Mondays were the worst. I would work for 12 hours and walk with like Mondays. $60. Yeah, because Mondays were the worst shifts and I always worked them. I'm like, who the fuck took over my Mondays? Nobody even wants that. Yeah.
That's so fun. So where'd you go after that?
I went through a temp agency and I got hired doing, it's just so funny to see these jobs that I was like so unfit for. I did tech support.
What?
I did tech support.
How are you qualified for that?
I'm not qualified.
We didn't even know the difference between a WAVE and an MOV file before this.
You know, and I still don't. I still don't.
So, like, IT work?
No, like, for a retail analytics company, I don't think I can talk too much about it. Because it's, like, a specific... But there's, like, a thing that stores have that, like, counts their customers going in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to call stores and be like, hey, plug your, like, thing back in.
Oh,
and
okay.
if they wouldn't, I had to, like, send out a tech. And that all involves a lot of, like... stuff getting typed into a computer.
So that's very behind the scenes.
I typed the stuff in. Yeah.
I never knew they did that.
Yeah. I've had a lot of jobs that people didn't know people did.
Like, odd jobs. I love the idea. I love odd jobs.
Yeah. I captioned phone calls for deaf and hard of hearing people. And I would be on...
You were listening in?
Yeah.
Just to make sure...
I listened to half of the conversation. And then I revoiced it in like a robot voice. Because this was before,
it was
like,
to help them.
Yeah.
So you were listening to deaf people speak, and then you'd say
no,
repeat?
No. I was listening. I was the ears of the deaf person.
Okay.
So if, like, you called your deaf grandma,
mm-hmm.
I would just say what you were saying. I would repeat it, and then the thing would make it type up a caption. And if that got fucked up, I fixed it. I typed, like, a correction.
How did they see the caption?
They have a special
phone. On their
phone. Yeah.
Wow. That's nice they have that. That's a good invention.
Yeah, but I would hear people talking, and I would hear them arguing about whether or not there was a person listening. And I can't tell you how many times I had to caption people being like, there's not a person there. It's a machine that does it. And there were even people who were like, I, like, command you to identify yourself if there's a person listening to this.
And you're just, like, guiltily typing.
Yeah, you just, like, get fired if you did. You
that
know,
means
you can't
someone,
interact
you're,
with
you're
them.
Like, the behind the Alexa.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think there's a person in my Alexa. Oh, chilling.
You have one?
Yeah.
I don't trust it.
You have a phone.
I know. And they're listening.
Yeah.
Because I just spoke about, I was telling someone I think I have ADD because I keep losing my train of thought.
Yeah.
And see, I'm doing it again. And then I have ads for ADD. I mean, yeah.
It's not now, a new story. But. Mine reads my mind. I've like definitely had it where I'm like, I know I didn't say that. And I had that thought earlier today. And yes, it's possible that I saw something, didn't realize I saw it, and that triggered the thought, but I swear it's happened so many times.
It's
where
creepy.
I'm like, no, I thought that, and it knows that, which means it also, like, can guide your thought.
Yeah. But did you watch that documentary?
Yeah.
It didn't freak me out as much as it did for other people.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, like, figured
mm-hmm.
with most
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, well, that it felt like common sense.
Yeah.
But there's people who I know, I met a girl who went into psychosis from it. But she was doing a lot of hallucinogenics. She went into, like, a paranoid, schizophrenic episode from the documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's only reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's like when you're wondering, like, are they listening? And it's like, if it's confirmed, and then it probably freaks people out, I would assume.
Yeah, it was weird because the angle they took was like, no one is listening. But then throughout the documentary, they had like people being let's make him think that, like, listen.
But we control your emotions. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. They said there were no people, but then they had people acting out what the technology is doing. So I could see that. I mean, I didn't like it.
They're like, Laura hasn't been on her phone in a little bit. Let's send some advertisements for a birthday party. And it's like, wait, it's like they're concocting experiments.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, all right, well, we're all doing it, so what are you going to do? You know, you kind of just have to let go.
Yeah, it was like, if I stare at my phone for long enough, will my crush send me a message? Like, how does that work?
And that's how a girl's mind works. I've had those kind of thoughts before. That's funny. Okay, so then after you did the translating job, I love to hear about an odd job.
Oh, yeah. That was when I still lived in Milwaukee. So then, yeah, I did in Chicago the, whatever I said, waitress, and then tech support. And then I saved up enough money there and, like, cashed in my 401k and moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And, and drove for Lyft for a little bit, which, like, so I, like, hadn't driven a car in 10 years, and I just, like, made a list of everything I would need to do to move here from Chicago, and then just started, like, checking things off of the list, and it was, like, buy a car, like take your driver's license test, like, study for your driver's license test.
And is that you just creating the steps that you need, like, putting steps into place for you to... If something feels overwhelming, you're like, okay, like, it's just these things that I have to cross off.
Yeah, just make it littler, because for me personally, 500 little things is so much less overwhelming than one huge abstract thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, move your whole life to California. Why can't fucking do that? Okay, can you pack up, you know, this shelf of books? Well, yeah, certainly.
Yeah, I love lists for that reason. It definitely... makes it feel less overwhelming.
Yeah, it was pages and pages. I just wrote everything I could think of and then just started doing it.
And it's so satisfying to cross things off lists. Are you still listening? No.
I haven't had to in a while. I feel like I, like, stuff is small enough now where it's like I just don't have that much stuff. But if I had a huge, if I had to move again, I for sure would.
So when you moved to LA, how did your family and friends in Wisconsin feel about that? Did they say shit?
Yeah, they said shit. I mean, and I was aware of this at the time, that people were only capable of having the reaction to my moving that they would be to their own moving across the country. And so everything that someone said, I'm like, well, that's... for you.
Like a projection.
Yeah.
Of, like, their own capabilities.
Yeah, your own fears, your own whatever's keeping you here. Why ever you're here.
And did you say that?
No.
Okay.
Like,
that's good that you
have
that awareness, though, and that you didn't internalize that.
Yeah. Well, no, because people were just, like, the traffic's so bad. I'm like, okay, well, it's belligerently cold here and it fucking sucks. So,
yeah.
You know, I'll take the
I'll just stay here and hang out with Germans and drink beer or whatever else happens in Wisconsin.
And the traffic was bad on the way here.
Beer and Germans?
Yeah. And, yeah, brats.
Bratwurst?
Yeah,
Bratwurst. What did I say?
Bratwurst.
Bratwurst.
Yeah.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
Ugh.
Is it?
No.
Oh.
Lunch and dinner.
Oh, really? And not breakfast?
Snacks. No.
Do you still have bratwurst?
I don't.
Is it a nostalgic?
I don't. They have sugar in them.
Oh, what is it, like a sausage?
Yeah.
There's my New York accent.
Yeah, they're good. They're awesome.
Why is it called that as opposed to like a sausage? Is a sausage an Italian?
I mean, why is a shirt called a shirt? Why is anything called anything?
Yeah, but like, is it basically what a sausage is?
No.
It's just another name for it. Like, do you know what the difference is?
Yeah, it tastes way different. If you bit one, you'd be like, oh, this is different. You know how, like, Italian sausage tastes different than chorizo?
Yeah, so it's like with the filling. But it's bratwurst is pork.
Yeah.
But maybe it's like the seasoning.
Yeah.
I like to learn.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've just never thought about it. And I've never not known about that.
What do you have with ketchup?
You, I'm so glad you asked. You have it with sauerkraut and mustard.
Ooh.
You wouldn't put ketchup on it, broad, I don't think. Although it sounds good. It wouldn't be bad.
I love sauces.
Yeah, sauerkraut and mustard.
Is it in a bun or just on a plate?
In a bun.
Sounds like a hot dog.
Yeah.
Is a bratwurst a hot dog?
No.
No.
No. It's different. They're like gray. They're not much
They're
looking.
Gray?
Yeah.
I hate that. That's appetizing.
I mean, they're like gray. They're like gray brown.
What's the side that typically goes with a bratwurst? Potatoes?
Potato chips. Or like cheese curds.
Yeah, that is like cheese curds. What is
so
that?
So aggressive to have with.
What is a cheese curd?
Oh my god.
A dried
oh
cheese.
Oh my god. It's so funny because I dated a guy from here and I brought him back some cheese curds from Wisconsin like a few years ago. And he was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, they're so good. They're little cheese nuggets. And there are fried cheese curds and they're just cheese curds.
I think I'd like it fried.
That's bomb.
Does it taste like a mozzarella stick?
Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
And then what's the plain cheese curd? Like a shaving of
parmesan? It's just a little nugget of... No. It's just a little nugget of cheese.
Oh, just like a piece of cheese?
Yeah, but a nugget. It's important that you understand.
A nugget, like a, like size-wise, like a large chunk of cheese. It's a chunk of cheese.
Yeah, they're like little cheese pebbles. Cheese pebbles.
So it's a marble.
It's not a perfect sphere. It's a nugget. You've seen a nugget.
Like a chicken nugget.
Picture like a gold nugget. Do you know what I'm saying?
A McDonald's chicken nugget.
That's not what I'm saying. Can you picture a gold nugget that's not a McChicken
nugget?
Oh,
gold. Dude, this isn't food at this point. This is,
no, I'm talking
this
about
is a
like,
mineral.
Yeah.
No, or what is...
Can you picture that?
Okay. Yeah.
Now, have that be cheese. And they can be white or orange. And they're really good. And they got ones where they'll put, like, dill in it. They got all different
Ooh,
kinds.
I love dill.
Yeah, you
love
them.
I love dill.
Yeah, I've never had a cheese curd I didn't like. They have all different kinds. They're
herb?
So good. You could find yourself an herb curd, for sure. For sure.
And cheese is, like, the big thing in Wisconsin. Okay, is it Wisconsin or Wisconsin? And do you hate me for saying all this? Because I'm truly trying to learn.
It's just so funny because it gives me some insight into what you hear when I talk.
No, not you. It's just like I feel like what I've learned over the years, like my impression.
It's Wisconsin.
Like, you know how you're in a state and you grow up there and then you don't know exactly what's going on in that other state, but it's the things that you hear.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you're like over there and they're like, oh, people from New York are like loud and obnoxious. Like, that's what they're doing over there.
Yeah.
I'm like, Wisconsin, or it's Wisconsin, and it's like cheese. Or like Idaho's potatoes.
But I've been in New York, and I think most people know about New York because we've seen it on TV so much, whereas like no one knows about Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's like, why
thank
you?
You. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for understanding.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. I'm not like, Chelsea's stupid because she doesn't know all about Wisconsin.
Well,
I
and
just
for
think
part of
so
on this podcast is that I'm terrible also at geography and history, so this, I feel like, is inclusive with that. But okay, so Wisconsin, is that just the Midwest accent? Like Wisconsin.
Yeah. Well, and it's never sounded like that to me. That's why I'm cracking. Wisconsin. Is that what you hear when I say that?
You don't do it.
Okay.
But you're not doing a Midwest accent. Do a Midwest
Wisconsin.
Accent.
I don't know.
Dan, do you know about Wisconsin?
I've heard it.
Yeah, we've heard Wisconsin. Maybe is there different areas of like different levels of accent, kind of like how in England there's like Cockney and like a proper British.
Yeah, big time. So I'm from Milwaukee, which is the biggest city mm-hmm. in Wisconsin. So people have the least of accent there.
Mm-hmm.
They sound the most normal. But yeah, if you get up and God, I can't even do it because it's so gross to me.
No, I like it. I love accents.
I have to take a second to like go into
channel.
It.
Channel.
I can't even do it.
But it's a little bit about, isn't the voice that you do on stage, can I describe it?
Yeah, yeah.
It is very, like, Midwest, it's like a heightened Midwest, right?
Yeah.
Or is it a pitch?
I don't know, it just kind of comes out. Like, it just kind of comes out. It's just its own thing. It started, I was making these like cooking with Lara videos and they were 15 seconds long and I would cook like a frozen burrito or something, you know? And so I had to talk really fast and my voice got higher, and it just kind of adopted, and it created this character who's like a dumbass who's like telling people how to make a frozen burrito, which like you can figure it out, you know. And then I just like put it on stage, and all my jokes hit harder. And
I love that. I got the chills because I think figuring out those little things make such a big difference and so interesting. Like, I would relate that to, like, again, with, like, Sebastian. Like, you hear the story where, like, Sebastian was always doing his thing, and then there was, like, this one potluck set where, like, everything clicked for him and he changed. He's sort of, like, I don't know. Damn, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. So whenever I hear those little things, it's like I get the chills. Because it's like Punky told me, like, one day everything changed for her on stage because she woke up and she was like, I'm just not going to give a fuck, like, every day. Like, every day for the next year, and I'm going to see if anything changes in my life. But, like, I just am going to truly just, like, not care. And, you know, I know, like, Jamar had an experience like that. So for me, like, hearing you say that is, like, your version of that. Which really, like, makes a big difference, and I think when someone can click into something like that, it's, like, how you just, like, skyrocket into something, right? Like, did you feel like everything started changing? Like, did it feel like a puzzle piece, like, clicked in a weird way, or was it not that?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. I don't know. I'm trying to remember it, because I don't think it was as... I think that there was, like... a joke I wrote that just somehow was in that voice that just like brought it out of me. And that was after I moved here. And it was really when I moved here, because like I'm not Midwestern in the Midwest. I'm just like a person, you know? But here it was the thing that people noticed about me. People commented on my accent. And so I like played it up, and then I would go into my old material and like not use it. I don't know.
Part did you on your own decide to come to play it up, or did someone say something to you?
I did. Just
that's incredible awareness.
Well, because people laugh.
But even to notice that and then double down on that, because I feel like I could see a lot of people being like, oh yeah, they like, or just feeling like, or not being able to pinpoint it, or maybe not wanting to like. Double down, because it is vulnerable to, it's sort of like a level of an act out in a way.
Yeah, it's definitely awkward if it's like not working. So I think that that's like what you mean by vulnerability, is like it something like that, like a big act out or like using a silly voice. It's great if it's killing. If you're bombing, it makes you want
to
die.
You can't go back to your voice. No. You have to stay committed.
You have to be talking
so much that, like, have you had
voice.
Any weird experiences with that? I never thought of that.
Yeah.
And then you have to be like, oh, well, fuck you then.
You have to just be in this, like, dumb voice. Yeah.
Do you get off stage and continue? Is it, like, a mental thing of switching it on and off? Or do you find yourself in your regular life? Or do you feel like when you go, have you ever gone on stage and... you weren't doing the voice, and then you're like, oh shit, I have to click into that?
Yeah.
Was it a different set?
That happened the other night. Something happened that really threw me off. There was just like a really aggressive man in the audience who also was the owner of the venue. And he like flipped out. He had like touched the other female comic's ass, and he threatened to grab my ass while I was on stage. And so
what?
I was like, who the fuck are you? I was like, I should not have to put up with this. You should just pay me, and I should get to leave right now. Like, I was fucking pissed.
In LA?
I was pissed, yes.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, yeah, we'll talk after this. I was fucking livid. This was, like, 2 nights ago. Frank was there.
Yeah.
And I talked to the guy who ran the show, and he said he's not going to have shows there anymore. Because I was like, you can't. Put your comics in that position.
Yeah.
Like,
so crazy to hear that today.
Yeah.
Like, still?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. But I had to do my time to get my money.
Mm-hmm.
And so then after that, I, like, went into my material, and it was, like, the most awkward thing ever, because I had just been in a fight with a man as, like, Lara in real... You know, I'm not talking in a fucking Mickey Mouse voice when I'm, like... defending myself against this crazy person, and then I had to like turn the voice on and go into my material. So I was like, well, 20 minutes is, you know, the fastest way to pass this time is just to say my jokes. And so I basically recited my jokes. And it was not fun for me. But it was one of those sets where afterwards people are like, that was like a great set. I love how you handled that. And I'm like, I wanted to die. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? But that, I think that that's great. I mean, if I can still perform after that, it's all just practice, even though I hate having to be in certain situations and I've had sets that I would not want to do again. It's all just practice.
Yeah. I mean, I do believe, like, every time you just get better, even though when people are like, oh, it doesn't matter. Like, I think every opportunity is something that you can learn.
Yeah.
Especially if you're paying attention and not on, like, full autopilot and you're connected.
Yeah.
And stuff, which is a practice, too, sometimes, because it can feel, like, very by rote. And, like, I try to, like, now experiment with, like, different things. Like, if I'm going to do that same joke, like, how can I do it differently? Or, like, what can I play with, like, emotionally, or how I'm connecting to people about it and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've had, like, it's always, like, a continuing evolution of, like, the way that I'm connecting to the audience and trying to figure out, like, different ways to become more open too, which is, like, something I totally struggled with for a while. Like, were you're a very open person on stage. Like, was that something that you were initially, or is that something you just grew into with time?
It was definitely, I made a conscious choice really early on that I wasn't going to try to be attractive to men when I was on stage. Because I think that was, like, the first block. It's like, I don't want these guys to hear me saying this stuff, you know? And then I, like, busted my gut out and, like, started saying disgusting shit.
I forgot that. That's so funny. But now you're not doing that bit, are you?
I can't. I tried. It didn't
work. Was it filmed? Did you do that on speed?
No. I didn't do it on speed.
Oh.
God.
Because it was so funny. I'm glad that you brought that up, because I remember the first time that I saw that, and I think I told you, I got chills from it, and, like, the energy that happens in the room with, like, the women just appreciating that and relating to it and, like, loving it, it's so powerful in ways that other comics don't have that same connective energy.
Thank you. Yeah, it was when they were, like, shooting the Showtime documentary.
Yeah.
I told my mom about it back when I was still telling her when I was excited about stuff in my career.
Oh, and we'll talk about that after.
And she was like, "You're not gonna do that joke where you show your stomach, are you?" Or, like, "You're not still doing that joke where you show your stomach, are you?" And I just, like, started crying because they had absolutely filmed me doing that joke. And I was so proud of that joke.
Yeah.
Because of that. Because of, like, the feedback I got from women. Because it, like, made me feel freer every time I did it. Mm-hmm. You know? It made me feel ownership of my body.
Yeah.
And so to have the thing I was proudest of be the thing that my mom was most ashamed of was, like, really difficult. And we can absolutely talk about that more after. Because the more stuff happens, like, the harder it gets, that it's like, oh, it's, like, truly never good enough. It's, like, really never gonna be.
Yeah, I have to make a conscious decision to stop fucking telling my 100%. Parents things.
Absolutely, yeah.
My mom especially.
There's so much going on.
I have been doing that, and I've been discussing that in therapy and over and over again, and I would forget it every time, and, like, and it was so painful, and, you know, sometimes I still want to slip and, like, tell her something, but, like, I'm never getting the reaction that I want.
Yeah, 100%.
Shouldn't it be, like, silent?
Yeah.
Or just, like, find a way to negate it or, like, put me down or whatever.
Something negative, 100%.
And I don't even think she's, like, I don't know. I don't even know if she's, like, aware that she's doing it, but, yeah, it's hard. It's hard, and then it's like, okay, just go to the people that, like, love you, and, like, you have to kind of, like, think, like, who's my group? Who's, like, who's in my bleachers sort of thing?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And it's not on purpose, but she cannot help herself. She cannot help herself. And so I've been doing work with, like, my inner child and, like, being my own loving parent. And so now when something happens, I'll be like, good job. Like,
yeah.
Look what you did. You did that. Like, I'll give myself all of the feedback and the love and like the I'm proud of yous that I always wanted from her. Mm-hmm. And it turns out like I really don't need her to say that shit to me. It'd be nice, but it's not gonna happen. But mm-hmm. I can have my own back.
Totally. Yeah, I do that a lot in my morning pages. Like, I'll really, like, cheer myself on, and I'll start it, like, feeling like shit about something and insecure, and then by the end of, like, the third page, like, it's completely turned around, and I feel good, and it's like I have to, like, pump myself up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many morning pages do you write?
3.
How long have you been doing that?
Probably, like, 7 years.
And it's anything you want?
Yeah, well, it's part of the artist way.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Uh-uh.
No. So, a part of the artist way, so you basically go, the artist way is incredible, but I did it, I think, about 7 years ago, and you go through a chapter a week with, like, a group, or you can do it on your own, but I think it's better to do it with a group, and it's a whole experience, and there's all these questions and prompts and stuff, and it's amazing, and the woman who wrote it is also sober, too, so it has, like, a lot of the similar language and stuff, and part of it is morning pages, so you free write 3 pages every morning, and it takes like 30 minutes, and it's incredible, and the stuff that comes out, like, I've always been someone who's loved writing, and I have a hard time sometimes, like, voicing how I feel and communicating, you know, because, like, growing up, like, no one paid attention to my feelings sort of thing, so, yeah. Like, I kept everything inside,
yeah.
But, like, journaling feels like a very safe thing for me to do, because, like, it's how I feel heard, and, like, if I'm not putting pen to paper, sometimes, like, everything is stuck in my subconscious, but I don't exactly, like, until I see it on paper, I'm like, oh, there it is. Yeah. Like, everything is just so much more identifiable, and, so, yeah. It's great.
So you're not writing jokes when you do it, you're just writing whatever comes out?
Yeah, it's just like, it's essentially just journaling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I'm not incredible about like doing it every day. Like, you know, it's like anything, like sometimes I do it every day, sometimes I do it once a week.
Yeah.
Whatever. But I did it, you know, yesterday and today, and I try to be good about it because it just gets a lot of shit out. And it can be like anything, like, oh, I have to write today.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that shit to myself.
Yeah. I really have been, like, enjoying my meditation practice mm-hmm. because I feel like that is releasing a lot of the steam. And when I'm meditating and thoughts come to me, I visualize them, like, going up to my higher power, like, evaporating off of my hands, like, steam, mm-hmm. just all mm-hmm. of it. So it's like, oh, you want to, like, think about your mom 10 times? Okay. And then I just, like, give it up mm-hmm. over and
turning
over.
Turning it over.
Yeah. But I think that writing would be... I mean, I think that that's, like, such an awesome way to get rid of it, too.
Yeah, it's just such a great tool to just, like, get it all out.
Yeah.
Because if not, like, I'll just hold everything inside.
Yeah. Some, like, observate. I think it's just so important to take time to be present and give ourselves the space to observe our thoughts. Because we're not as fast as we, like, think we are. Like, generally, it's, like, 6 thoughts. That are just like on a loop, you know what I mean? It's not that many things that we're going back to, but it feels like a lot, and we get overwhelmed thinking the same 6 things over and over.
Whatever. Yeah, and I realize too, like when I'm writing and I see in front of my face, I'm like, I'm being so hard on myself.
Mm.
Just about like anything, and it, and sometimes I don't even realize it because it's just going on inside, and then I'm like, oh my God, like, stop.
Yeah.
And just like to... you know, be able to fix that thought and be like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I want to try that.
Yeah.
I wonder what would come up. I used to journal all the time and I loved doing it. And that was like before I had stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a boyfriend read my journal and like used all this stuff in it against me.
No!
And got really mad and I was like, this isn't, you can't read this! You can't.
That's so violating.
I never wrote in a journal again.
You need a log.
I mean, I've done, like, work that we do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've done that. But, yeah, a little maybe.
You need a little diary with a heart lock on it.
For my inner child. A little diary with a lock.
It's fun, too. I mean, obviously, it's not going to happen today. No one's going to read it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you live by yourself, right?
Yeah. I do.
I'm trying to encourage you to get one. But, yeah, it's amazing. Let me know if you get one. It's fun.
Yeah, maybe I will.
And then one more thing too. Was the voice related to something to do with Home Alone?
Oh, wow, yeah. Steven
told me. He told me that. He thought that was so funny because I love that movie.
Yeah, so what I'm like kind of channeling is Kevin McAllister in Home Alone in the part where he's like, and this is like kind of only for one bit, but it's definitely the essence of like the character, is when the mom's like, I'm mad at you. Like, I don't want to see you for the rest of the night. And he's like, I don't want to see you ever again in my whole life. That's it.
And then he stays at the top of the stairs, right?
Yeah,
so it's the building. Yeah, I've noticed, like...
Just the way he points at her, he's like, I don't want to see you ever again.
So is it the cadence, or is it...
I don't know. It's just the whole moment.
Yeah.
It's just the moment. It's the way he is.
Well, I started...
There's so much, like, big anger in standing up, but he's also just such a little guy. And so I think that, like, big frustration... coming out of, like, a silly little voice is funny. Like, that contrast is funny.
No, it is. Totally.
Or, like, filth coming out of, like, a silly little voice.
Yeah.
I get so fucking bummed when I get asked to do clean sets. And, like, I'll do them if it's, like, enough money. But I'm like, man, do I hate...
But you have great clean jokes.
Thank you. But I like the S word.
Yeah.
I like the fucking F word, man. I also like to just not have to think about it. I like to just be able to say what I want to say.
But even if you said fudge, it'd still sound funny.
I would never say it.
But it's like part of the character. And I know I keep separating it, but I'm kind of just fascinated by it, and I like it.
Yeah.
So I mean it all in, like, the voice, the character. I guess I don't really know how to...
No, I don't.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about School of Thought.
Yeah.
So we both do Stacia's, Stacia Patwell, School of Thought. I have to look at the camera to say it. We both do her class. So we started doing it during the pandemic. What was your relationship like to diet and exercise before? And then what was it about her class that changed things for you?
Oh my God. Wow. So I don't know why this all like came back to me. My relationship to diet and exercise was like a lot of overeating and a lot of restricting and just that cycle for my whole life. And it actually started and ended in the same place, which was like with me drinking Slim Fast shakes and then just eating on top of them, like overeating on top of them, like starting the day with two Slim Fast shakes like you're supposed to and then just eating more than a day's worth of calories in addition to those. And that was the first diet that I ever went on as a little kid. I remember being home in the summer, and both my parents worked, and I remember taking like this green bowl and a spoon and my mom's Slim Fast powder and milk and like mixing up these Slim Fast shakes in the TV room and like drinking these shakes, and then I would eat on top of it. And probably now looking back, I'm like, I probably didn't know how to fix myself anything else. I probably didn't know how to make myself like lunch.
And if they were your moms, you probably watched her doing that same behavior.
And I'm like, it's chocolate milk. It's a whole meal and you get
in a bowl.
Dinner.
So it sounds like you thought of it as a dessert too.
And I'm sure I watched the commercials and watched the women be thin and say they could lose weight. I mean, kids can hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Because I remember wanting to lose weight. I remember feeling fat for the first time when I was 4. I remember being in kindergarten getting my picture taken for my cube and feeling fat. And I think a lot of that was that I heard my mom talk about feeling fat all the time. My mom's been talking about being fat all the time. And she's heavy. But as soon as I had memories, I remember feeling too big in my body. And in quarantine, I was so afraid at the beginning, I didn't know what was going to happen, that I ordered like a lot of food, like non-perishable food, in case we like couldn't leave our houses and the stores ran out of food.
Yeah, like bags of rice and beans and shit.
Cases of Slim Fast shakes.
Oh, you went right back to
it. I went right back to it. And I didn't even realize how like full circle it was until I'm in like a support group for overeaters.
Yeah.
And as part of my work in that program, I wrote out everything I remembered about my food history, any like dieting, overeating, like anything. And I was able to see like the bookends, and it was actually like a really cool life-changing moment for me, because it was when I saw like, oh, I'm never gonna be able to do better than this. Like, I'm never gonna be able to do this by myself. Mm-hmm. I need help, I need a different way. And by that point, I was working with Stacia, and I was working out a lot, and it was really hard, and I wasn't like using ankle weights or hand, like my body weight was my weight, you know? And
I still don't want to use the ankle weights.
Oh, they suck.
It's so just hard. Easier. I need new ones too. Mine always fall off.
But you want to get that big ass.
I know.
And I bought a scale. I became willing to like look at what that number was again, because I hadn't looked in years. And I was at my top weight, and I just was doing too much work to not be losing weight. Like, her workouts were too hard, and I was doing them every day. And I was like, I have to fix my food. And she's so motivating that she'll tell you that, you know? Because I'm doing her workouts, but it's not just, like, taking on the physical fitness part, because while you're working out, she's also saying, like, you're in your perfect body already. You just have to unzip it and let it out. Like, she gave me permission to want to be hot. She gave me permission to want all the things that I had always really wanted. She gave me permission to not want to feel gross in my fucking clothes anymore, and not want to fuck with the lights off. You know what I mean?
She has such a skill. Yeah. And I love that she brings spirituality in it, and the way that she just talks to everyone, and she's so candid, and it's so refreshing, because I feel like we're so used to like these workout teachers who are so robotic and just saying all the shit that you're, and it's so recycled, and she's so fresh and connected, and she has the recovery background, so I love the language that she speaks, and if you're in recovery, you can connect to that. And she knows so much about the body too, and makes you look at it in a different way, and like, of course, with a sense of humor too.
Yeah she's hilarious. Yeah, I still do her videos, even though I know enough of the exercises that I could do the workouts without her telling me what to do, but it's just so fun.
I know. It's nice, and it's motivating to continue, too, because I'd probably take breaks.
Yeah.
Or, like, not want to do a third set or whatever.
It keeps me on pace. It keeps me motivated, even though I don't always do the things that she's saying to do. Like, sometimes she'll just have, like, so much ass stuff, and I'm like, I want to do push-ups. I want, like, toned arms, you know what I mean? But the pacing is the same, you know, and the like finishing, and also just like the motivational stuff that she says, like, it helps to have her there being like, don't be a bitch, finish like an athlete. The world has enough pussies. Like, finish like a fucking athlete. If you do a whatever workout, you're gonna have a whatever body. Mm. If you're eating whatever food, you're gonna have a whatever body. How hot do you wanna be? Mm-hmm. How bad do you want this? And I'm like, oh, I want this really fucking bad, or I wouldn't have worked this hard for it.
Yeah. And even like doing the videos every day is very impressive. I think at one point I was doing one like every day, but it didn't last long for me. And now I'm like once a week, and it's so easy to fall off and stuff. So like, how long were you doing them every day for, and how did you keep that motivation for yourself? Because that's fucking hard. And you get really sore, too.
I don't get sore. I get less sore than, like, ever before. But I do like it when I get kind of sore.
Yeah, me too.
Now, like, my side of my butt, and, like, this butt's getting juicier. I don't know how long. It was like, 5 or 6 days a week, realistically, because there was a long time where it was every day, but then I read about like rest days, and I'm like, all right, I have to not work out every day. But, or I would do like an active rest day where it's like, I'm just doing like the easiest three circuits that I could do. But also I just don't feel good when I don't like move my body. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel good anymore if I don't engage those like major three muscle groups. And I don't know shit about shit, so I know there are more than three muscle groups.
Wait, what are the three muscle groups?
In my head, the three muscle groups are like, so I do like a circuit of butt, a circuit of abs, and a circuit of arms.
I had this, what I was thinking.
Where each exercise, you know, targets that part. And I mean, the great thing about the exercises that she has people do is they all are like whole body.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
So did the diet fall into place after doing it for a while? Because when you're working out all the time, your body starts craving healthier foods.
The diet just, I don't know. I mean, I joined this group.
Yeah.
And, was able to just like get my food figured out with them. They helped me with that.
Like, see how kind of stuff?
Oh, I can't really say.
No, totally. It is, that is also like the missing element too.
Yeah.
Cause it isn't just about exercise. It also is diet. And like diet is the one thing for me that like, I love food. I don't really have a lot of things that I can have fun with. Like I can't be like super strict. Like I have to enjoy myself. Cause I just like, I just love to eat. I love food. I love trying stuff. Like, and I try to be good, but at a certain point, like I'm like, I just have to like be who I am.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Like, I can't overdo it, but, like, I'll definitely, like, I try to have the balance. But that's, like, a working thing for me.
Yeah, well, no shit. I tried to have the balance, too, Chelsea. But I can't fucking do it.
I know, it's hard.
I tried to drink one drink, too.
Yeah.
Like,
I know. I'm not in balance.
It's
hard for me to live in balance. But it is, oh, I read this amazing quote today that was something like, self-care is freedom from yourself or something. And I just like love that. And I was like, oh, I think I'm butchering it, but just the idea that it's like taking care of yourself is like a way of getting freedom of just like not beating yourself up over it and taking care of yourself. And I don't know. Just like a...
Yeah. Our Instagram feeds are probably so much of the same stuff.
Oh, so I only got a couple questions. Sometimes I did a Q&A thing.
Oh, right.
But sometimes people write them, sometimes they don't. I'll ask you a question or two if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the first one is no question. Just want to say she's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, what's it like being beautiful around Rose Comics?
Shut up. Who asked that?
I don't think you know them. It looks like a random girl. Okay. How many more dudes or girls are in your DMs since your Rogan appearance?
A lot.
Yeah.
Next question.
What's the worst city you've ever done stand-up in?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. That's a great question. Ooh, let's, I have it. Kokomo, Indiana.
Like, I thought Kokomo was in Florida.
I'm sure there's a better one.
Kokomo, Indiana.
Yes. This is the worst city I've ever done stand-up in.
What is Kokomo, Indiana?
It's just a tiny, shitty town in Indiana. Yeah.
That's so funny. I feel like you're a very versatile comic, and that you could perform anywhere, and it works.
Thank you.
That's my impression. Is that...
This town was a shithole, and the club was, like, a room with cafeteria tables, and the booker said he would book me for a feature weekend if I fucked him, and his wife and daughter lived upstairs from the club where he was saying that to me.
No.
So that's why I'm like, where's the worst? Kokomo, Indiana.
Yeah. Is there any cities that you feel like you've performed in when they, like, aren't getting you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
To me, you're one of those people who, like, can perform anywhere, and it just works. Because I feel like you're so relatable, your material, you know?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Which
is hard.
I think that now my set is tourable, because now I've been touring, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was before COVID, so I had the opportunity to, like, try different material in front of, like, people who don't think the way I do, people who don't share all of my beliefs. People from different, like, socioeconomic classes on, like, both ends of the spectrum, you know? But I think it's pretty hard to shape a set from just here that people will laugh at.
I had a hard time in Kansas City, Missouri. I was doing a weekend featuring, and I just... Actually, I was with Steven. We were both switching off between opening and featuring for Josh, so like every other show. Mm-hmm. And I was bombing so much that I was like, I'll just do the opening. Like, I just didn't want to do more time. And like, I felt so ashamed for saying that. And I had so much guilt. And like, I just beat myself up so much because it was like, I should think of every opportunity as a chance to get better. But I was like, I just don't, like, they don't like me.
Yeah,
they
don't
just don't like me.
Yeah, you don't have to fucking punish yourself. And torture yourself.
You know that whole thing, though, that you think you have to, and then you realize you don't?
Man, I wish I had a husband who would, like, come to shit with me where I could be like, you do my longer set. I'll do the harder one. That sounds like a dream come true. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel any guilt about that at all. That sounds wonderful.
You have a pretty good relationship with yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But it's still just me. Mm-hmm. Either person, I can't trade sets with myself.
No, but I meant just like with your outlook, like, of course you can say that. Like,
I see what you mean.
With just the, I guess, not beating yourself up about things and just being more easy on yourself. Is that the way that you've always been, or is that something you grew into?
I don't know. I think it's like an act as if kind of thing, you know, like fake it till you make it. Mm. I got very careful a couple of years ago about like the way I spoke to myself and got really just diligent and intentional. And I am that way.
Did something happen?
Yeah, I just started, I was like in, I was doing work around my like relationships and the person who was helping me with that, pointed it out to me and was like, I am very careful about the way I speak to myself. It really matters. And so I started catching myself, I mean, in the beginning, just 1,000 times a day, calling myself stupid, calling myself an idiot. I'm just saying awful things to myself over the slightest transgressions. Like, no, I'm not a fucking idiot because I dropped the cap of the almond milk. I'm sorry, I'm just not. You know what I mean?
Idiot.
And so now I say that back. Like, I will say that back to myself.
I'll to train like, your brain.
Yeah, I'll be like, no, I'm not stupid, actually. Mm-hmm. I had an emotion that, like, made me do this thing, and now we're going to make a different choice.
Yeah.
Like, I'll correct myself and be like, you don't get to speak to me that way. As if it's a different person. Mm-hmm. As if it's an abuser. Mm-hmm. Because it is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's my own voice, if there's someone following me around all day, calling me a stupid fuck-up. How am I supposed to feel? I'm going to feel like a stupid fuck-up.
Totally. Yeah, it's such a practice to do that, but it's so important. And I do feel like over time it clicks in faster.
Yeah.
But it's just about continuing to, like, recognize that and put that to rest. Or to...
Yeah.
I have certain friends who I'll minimize myself around.
Really?
And that's... Yeah, and I've recognized it and, like, I'll just, like, not want to be around them because I feel like it's something that like, comes out. But it's, like, I can't, you know, just people who, like, turn your light, what is that called? What's that phrase?
Dim your light
and stuff like that. Have you had relationships like that? Because I feel like you wouldn't stand for it.
I have, and I think that I cut people out almost too quickly. Like, I think that I could stand to do more work around my, like, friendships and like romantic relationships than I've had. My instinct is to just like cut the person out as soon as I see something I don't like, because I think that that's like encouraged too. If you hear the way people talk about relationships, it's like, take mixed signals as a no, one red flag is enough. And it's like, well, maybe instead of taking mixed signals as a no, I can ask for clarification. Maybe instead of one red flag being enough, I can ask myself, like, what is that thing? What does it mean? Have I seen this behavior from this person? You know what I mean? And so that's something I'm like doing work around too, where I like something that like came up recently in like some writing I was doing is like, that I don't give people a chance. So I'm trying to give people more of a chance. I'm trying to show people the same like tolerance that I would want to be shown in my relationships, which is like, I want to be able to show up to my relationships imperfectly and try and have people give me the opportunity to do things differently by telling me if I hurt their feelings or if they felt disrespected or whatever. You know, I want to know about it so I have a chance to show up differently. Because like, usually I don't know that I'm doing something wrong. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing anything wrong on purpose, you know?
I love that. That reminds me of the exercise, you know, like you write out your ideal mate.
Yeah.
All the characteristics and traits. And then the second part is you be those things. Yeah. But I never thought about that in terms of friendships, because I think it's also like my part too. It's like, if I want to stop gossip, like I don't want to be friends with someone who's gossiping, like then I need to stop gossiping sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should look at what that is and probably try to attract in a different thing.
I mean, I think about it in terms of friendships because like friendships are such a huge part of like my intimate relationships. Like I don't have family here, you know what I mean? So it's like my friends are so important that it really is like a huge loss if I like cut a friend out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I look back on my like friendship history, I have broken up with like best friend after best friend after best friend. Like I could go back and show you all of these like really funny, strong, powerful women where I was just like, I don't like the way you treat me.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't give them a heads up after, you know,
blocked.
A year or years of being mistreated. No, not blocked. But just iced the fuck out because mm-hmm. I didn't have the guts to stand up for myself in the moment mm-hmm. and be like, hey, it really hurts my feelings
totally.
When you speak to me that way. I feel really small, you know?
Mm-hmm. I've done the same thing too. And because I felt like at the time there was a part of me that was like, it's just easier this way.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you do get the courage to speak up for yourself in the moment and be like, oh, like that was like a weird tone. Are you like upset with me or something? Like, is there something you want to tell me? It gets easier over time. With some people, I'm still weary of doing it because I feel like they just aren't capable of responding the way that I want them to, or like I feel like some people just aren't capable of like hearing. Not that they're not going to respond the way, because however they respond is how they respond, but just like it's just not going to be beneficial to even try.
Yeah.
Which is sad.
Yeah.
And someone who
I was just talking to someone about that, about how many adults there are who are incapable of identifying and expressing a feeling. Because like what you just shared, I totally relate to being like, hey, that tone is pretty aggressive. Are you mad at me? Or clearly you're mad at me. Why are you mad at me? Have I done something to upset you? And the person's just like, no, it's fine. And I'm like, oh, well, if I haven't done anything, you need to fucking fix yourself. Right now.
Have you said that second part?
No,
that's so funny. Yeah, I have a friend who would always like have this passive aggressive tone with me, and then I finally we took some time apart, and then when they did it to me, I pointed out and I was like, hey, I noticed you have like a weird tone, like are you mad at me or something? And then they corrected themselves and acted differently, and I was like, uh-huh.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it's like, I don't want to have to fucking have a friend that I have to do that with.
Yeah, for sure.
At the same time, I have one last Instagram question. It's so stupid, but I'll ask it. Peanut butter and jelly are at war. Who wins and what type of bread was the battlefield?
Peanut butter and jelly peanut butter because they don't do sugar. The bread is a rice cake and kill jelly.
Yeah.
Right?
And this new look.
Did I answer it?
Yeah. Then I got the shine of fire hair in your outfit.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Love the hair.
I really like having my hair be lighter than my skin because it's always been darker than my skin. So I feel like I'm like the negative, I don't mean bad, but like photo negative image of myself.
Yeah.
Which is just an exciting time.
That's
funny. I'm having fun.
I've had my hair dark and light uh-huh. and you feel like such a different person. Like, I feel like I have all these different personalities with every shade.
Yeah.
Like, who is this new girl?
Oh my God, I love it. I want to be blonde and tan forever.
Yeah.
I love it so much. Yeah. Oh my God, it was really funny. I had a moment just now when I was driving here, and I saw this woman, and she was like stretching, and she had like her ass out, and she was like blonde and tan, and for a second I was like, fuck you. And then I was like, wait, I look like that. I'm that. And I got really upset.
That's so fun. And I see it and you caught it too.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait a minute.
I'm like, that's me.
That's fun. I change your hair too, like persona wise, like the makeup is becomes different, right? The outfits, like I love this look. This
Thank
is like
you.
A very coquette, retro, sexy.
Thank you.
Like do you find yourself taking on like a new?
It's just fun. I like playing dress up, and I hated shopping for my whole life until like a couple months ago when like malls reopened after COVID, and I was like, oh my God, I like the way I look in clothes.
Yeah.
Like, I can try stuff on and it fit, you know. I can shop at stores where I couldn't fit into anything, and now I'm like a medium, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just like really fun.
How has this affected the way that you feel on stage now?
It's interesting because I feel like so many things that we give up, there's that part where you're like, will I not be funny? Mm-hmm. And I was worried that audiences wouldn't react to me as well. I was worried I wouldn't be as funny. But I think that anything that we do in active addiction, which like I have a problem with food. Mm-hmm. Anything we do in active addiction, we're going to do it better when we're not in active addiction. And so it's gotten better. Audiences are responding better to me. I'm still funny. You know, I'm not getting dropped because I'm not overweight anymore.
Right. Did you have that fear? I mean, I know that obviously some of your jokes probably changed, but like you're someone who I feel like writes all the time. So it's like, oh, I don't need to worry about that. Like, did you have like some of that?
I mean,
I'm thinking about like the race car joke.
Yeah.
Or something. Or like the stomach bit.
By the way, that was race car, not race card. I want that to be crystal
clear.
You said it normal.
Some people think it's race car. Oh, did I sound like I could have said race card?
I just wanted
to specify
be very clear. Yeah.
Race car.
Not race car.
Well, I guess that joke still works. But like, I don't know what I'm talking about. But just like an example, like I feel like you did a lot of self-deprecating jokes. So are those changing now? Are you like losing them or just altering them? Or like, is it like,
I mean, I pretty much don't in my 45 minute set, there's some stuff from before COVID, but for the most part, I'm not doing stuff that's from before COVID. So all my jokes work for me now, but there definitely was a part of me that was like, you know, I've been told like your thing is that you're chubby and Midwestern. And so I'm like, well, if my thing is not that I'm chubby and Midwestern now, then what is my thing? Who am I? What's going to set me apart? Mm-hmm. Will anything? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But then even on like the heels of that, I was very aware that like, I've lost the weight, but what I've gained is like energy. Like I have so much more energy. I have so much more like agency over my body. I can use my body even more efficiently. And so I think I'm more animated on stage. I think I have more energy on stage. Like I think all of that comes across too.
Totally. Yeah. Like when I got married, I was like, oh shit. Like who am I now? You know, cause a lot of my set before that was just like slutty girl jokes.
Yeah.
So I had to be like, okay, well now that's not going to work because if people see me flashing a ring around or like I have to recalibrate like where everything is and then I have to be like, well, before, you know, I'm just adding in all those little transitions. If it's a longer set, this will continue. So like, yeah, it's like at first, like you just are like, oh, I have to make this adjustment. And then it's like, yeah, it's fucking fine.
Yeah.
Like, you'll come up with more jokes. It's fine.
It's fucking fine.
It's just fear.
Well, and with those jokes that you're referring to, like, specifically, like, all that people need to know for that joke to work is that, like, guys were calling me fat online, which they were.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
End of story. No one's going to be like, but you're not fat. You know what I mean? It's like, well, guys call me fat online.
Yeah.
Which has a lot more to do with them than what your actual body
is. Yeah, like. I didn't think of like the specificity of the joke, but I remembered that it was like a self-deprecating joke that was like, fuck you, like someone trolling it or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that one still works. I still do it in my like 45 minutes. Yeah.
Nice. Well, Laura.
Thank you so much
for having me. Thank you so much for coming on.
This was so fun.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And check out Laura on, you can still see the clip from Spade.
Yeah, just go to my Instagram, @larabeitz, LARABEITZ.
and check out her performing in a city near you.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.